Good morning.
Good morning.
As indicated a few minutes ago, my name is Beth Culp. I'm representing Continental Western Insurance Company this morning. This is an appeal from an amended judgment that was entered on October 9, 2012 by Judge Birkemeyer, Franklin County. Judge Birkemeyer found without issuing a written opinion that Continental Western, an insurance company, had an obligation to defend Franklin Quickesh and Ken and Jenna Ellen in an underlying action brought by Stephanie Whipple that involved the wrongful repossession of her car. We appealed, and the Court of Appeals reversed, finding that Continental Western wasn't obligated to defend Stephanie Whipple in that action because the conduct of Franklin Quickesh and Ken and Janet Allen in repossessing her car was an intentional act, and also under the standard established by this court, most recently in D.R. Sherry, Franklin Quickesh had to have foreseen the injury that was going to result when they took her car. And to cast this situation in the proper light, I guess I'd like to ask the court to consider this not so remote hypothetical. Let's assume that Continental Western issued a homeowner's liability policy to Stephanie Whipple. They do that. And let's say, like the policy here, that insurance contract issued to Stephanie Whipple provided coverage for property damage caused by an accident, and also excluded coverage for property damage that was expected or intended. Stephanie Whipple has the car. Stephanie Whipple really believes she's got the right to keep that car. She feels like she wrote that check out, she sent the last payment in to Franklin Quickesh, and she doesn't want to give it back. Franklin Quickesh sues Stephanie Whipple for the car. Would Continental Western be required to defend Stephanie Whipple in that action? The answer is no, of course not. Because her decision not to give up the car, which is depriving them of the loss of use of the car, right? Because they say they own the car. What the test is for whether or not there's a duty to defend is whether or not the damages sought in the underlying action would be covered. In this case, Franklin Quickesh was sued by Stephanie Whipple because they repossessed her car not once but twice. They're in the payday loan business. That's what they do. Franklin Quickesh is in the payday loan business. They made a loan to Stephanie Whipple. She pledged her car as collateral for that loan. They say she was in default. They believe that on two occasions they were legally entitled to go and take her car back. She says she wasn't in default, and they weren't entitled to take her car back. She had two causes of action in her amended petition. She had a cause of action for conversion. Then she had a cause of action for negligence. But the allegations that Stephanie Whipple made in support of both causes of action, the conversion and the negligence, were exactly the same. She said the defendant had no legal right to assume ownership or possession of her car. The defendant acted intentionally in exercising control over the car. The defendant intentionally deprived her of the use of her car. And the defendant refused to return the car when she demanded that they give it back. That's not an accident. Now, frankly, you know, the
What kind of accidents do you cover?
Well, let's say,
What would your insurance have covered? You're not covered. It's not a homeowner's covered for the payday loan company. What were you covering?
It covers premises liability. Anybody comes on the premises, they slip and fall. It covers any form of accidental injury, that is something that happens that results in bodily injury, physical harm to somebody, property damage. You hurt somebody's property, you know. Personal injury, defamation, libel, slander, advertising injury, covers a whole panoply of risks. But essential to the whole concept of insurance, Your Honor, is that the policyholder doesn't get to control the loss. And let's think about that in the context of this claim. They're in the payday loan business. They engage in self-help to get their collateral back. They control that risk. They didn't have to go and seize her automobile. And
they seized the wrong automobile. They seized the wrong, they seized the neighbor's automobile instead of the automobile of the person who allegedly didn't pay their loan. Would that be negligence in coverage? Or?
You know, Your Honor, in terms of an accident, I think really that's a mistake of fact, right? You know, it's a 1998 Plymouth Voyager, and somebody calls, Jane Doe calls and says, you know, my car stopped working. You need to go and pick it up and tow it. They take the wrong car. It's a mistake of fact. That's the kind of risk, but not a mistake of law. And I think that.
And why is this? I know you say it's a mistake of law, and certain aspects of it may be, but. If they wrongly thought she had not made a payment, whereas in fact she had, isn't that also a mistake of fact? I don't know the basis on which they found her in default.
But. No, that was a mistake of law that they were legally entitled to because she missed a payment.
That sounds like a mistake. I mean, it's also a mistake of law then that they thought they were legally entitled to take the neighbor's car because they thought it was the right car.
I think it's a mistake of fact. You know, I have to tell you that
I agree it is, but I don't understand why you're saying the other is not. If they,
it's what is the precipitating act? You know, what causes you to think that you have the right to do that? And it's foreseeing the injury, Your Honor.
And if you know all the facts and they think and you think they entitle you to repossess and they don't, that's a mistake of law. If you're mistaken in the facts that entitle you to repossess, that's a mistake of fact. It's going to depend on the circumstances.
Yes, but here's what's important, Your Honor, about that. Under D.R. Sherry, the issue of an accident is whether or not you could foresee the injury, right? Whether you could foresee the injury. In your hypothetical that you talk about, where they take the wrong car, they don't foresee that they're going to cause any injury to that person who they take the, you know, and they think they have the right. Here, they knew they were going to foresee the injury. They could see that she was.
This brings me to a fundamental question I have about, and so I want to make sure you answer that as part of this. I understand your distinction. You make two different arguments, really, in your brief, I think. One is that you just have to intend the act, not the injury, and then the other, but now you're saying they intended the injury. But in a lot of your brief, you seem to be arguing merely intending the act makes it an intentional act, and normally an intentional act, you have to intend the harm or the injury, because when you make a left turn and it's against the light, that's negligent, but you intend to turn left. So just intending the act is not normally enough. You have to intend a wrongful act. You have to intend harm. And so do you agree with that, or do you think I'm misstating what the law is on intentional act?
No, Your Honor, I think that you're correct in terms of what Missouri law is on. And really, let's separate out. There's two different issues here. One is whether or not the property damage was caused by an accident, right? That's one issue. Then the issue is, was the property damage intended or expected? Okay. And in Missouri, really, those two tests are together, because what it is that there is some kinds of conduct are inherently intentional and inherently harmful. Conversion is one of those. Sexual assault of a child is another one. Mm-hmm. So, you know, distinction. But
the Court of Appeals seemed to merge those two. So my concern seemed to see if you intend the act as opposed to the harm or something that inherently is harmful, that is sufficient.
I think if you really look at what the holding of the Court of Appeals was, though, they said, if you look at the harm here, which we're going to just say, for the purposes of this argument today, that there was Stephanie Whipple sued them for loss of use of her property. Well, you know, we argue with that. We don't think that's what she wanted, mm-hmm. but we'll just accept that. Under the Court of Appeals, you know, the way they
articulated it.
Yeah, articulated. Thank you. Was they said Franklin Quick Cash absolutely expected, foresaw that they would deprive her of the use of her vehicle when they intentionally took it.
So you're saying you just have to intend the harm, you don't have to intend that it be wrongful, basically?
Exactly. There's no, that's not the test. The test is not, let's put it this way. You know, if someone comes into my home at night, tries to harm me, I might be legally entitled to harm them, right? Our policy has a carve out for that, for bodily injury that occurs when you're trying to, you know, reasonably protect yourself, reasonably use of force to protect persons or property. There's a carve out for that, you know, self-defense carve out, recognizing that that is a risk that the company wanted to undertake. The company did not want to and did not undertake the risk of this payday loan company engaging in self-help, depriving somebody of the use of their vehicle. That cannot be the law.
Do we need to resolve that issue, or do you also have a narrower, more technical argument based upon the meaning of accident in the policy?
I don't think that there's a number of bases that you could reverse the trial court on. One is there was no accident. Two, it was expected or intended. It was exactly what they wanted to do with deprive the loss of use. But I also don't want to overlook the care, custody, and control exclusion, which is one very straightforward way to address this whole issue. And that just says, we don't cover property damage of property that's in the care, custody, and control of the insured. The only property damage they've been able to point to is the loss of use of the vehicle. That happened because that vehicle was in the care, custody, and control of the insured. I'm coming to the end of the, I've reserved 3 minutes, so unless there are other questions, I'll come back and talk to you.
Thank you, counsel.
Is there a broader duty to defend than there is to pay?
Yes. May it please the court?
You may proceed.
Yes, go ahead.
It's good to be back. Yes, very clearly there is a broader duty to defend than there is to indemnify. A doctrine that has been consistently held in Missouri courts. And it's important here that that obligation to defend is not dependent upon the sufficiency of the client's pleading, or the claimant's pleading, to state a cause of action. There's been kind of a tutorial in this case about Missouri fact pleading, but the insurance contract is what we look at here. The policy does not so limit the duty to defend. And as the Western District, I believe in the TIE versus Prairie Framing case said, the question is not whether the claimant stated a claim for relief sufficient to survive a motion to dismiss, but rather the question is, did the original and amended pleadings state enough to potentially or possibly establish coverage under the policy, thereby triggering the duty to defend?
So do we rely on what the pleadings state, or do we, as you argue, consider that she may file an amendment at some point and state additional facts?
Well, we start with the pleadings, Your Honor. And in this case, it's important to note that the amended pleadings not only raised negligence, but they also stated that this was a title loan company, and they repossessed cars. Now, when an insurer sees those allegations, that's going to trigger, in a case where you're talking about rightful possession, that's got to trigger some inquiry. And all they had to do was look back to their own policy to also see that this was a lender that relied upon security in its business.
Your opponent argues that other than labeling it negligence, the facts do not bring it under the policy, and that that's what we look at.
That would possibly be true in the area of indemnification, but under the duty to defend, if there's any possibility of coverage, then the duty locks in. And here it's easy to make that step, and that is this. When they use the word negligent in an amended pleading where they've earlier said they alleged conversion, they're making some change. They're no longer just relying upon an intentional act. They're talking about a negligent act. And as this court has said, negligence and accident involves a process, or can involve a process. In this instance, perhaps the determination that the security was valid, that it was perfected, and it turned out it was.
It is not uncommon for a plaintiff filing a claim who wants there to be insurance coverage to call something negligence when the facts do not support that it is a negligent act. And so is your argument if they put the word negligent in the pleading that there's a duty to defend under those circumstances?
I wouldn't go quite that far. I would limit it to the facts of this case and the area where we're talking about. And I would also suggest that when there is a possibility of coverage, that the insurer has at least a duty to defend against those pleadings, perhaps under a reservation of rights. Our client was left waffling in the breeze, fighting these pleadings, when it really should have been the duty of the insurer to do that.
Are you saying the duty would be merely perhaps to come in and defend and say, no, this isn't negligence, and get that count dismissed? Or because otherwise they might lose on negligence,
Precisely.
No, they shouldn't, because they don't have an attorney.
And,
but how is that not applicable in every case then? And where would that lead us if we did that? I mean, I understand the argument the one way, but the other is we really say we don't look at labels and just putting in the word if the facts don't support on their face a negligence claim.
Well,
wouldn't that lead us down that road?
Yeah, I see the point. I think we need to address somewhat the business of repossession, because it always involves intent. And I believe that the intent to do a lawful act. Mm-hmm. Now, there may be negligence involved, and there may be negligence in the process, but we need to look at the motivation. That's been a key factor in the cases that Missouri courts have found there has been no duty. For example, in the Brand case from the Western District, Judge Mitchell focused on the motivation of the folks to exclude somebody from a benefit plan, a wrongful act. Here we're talking about the legally justifiable act of taking one's security when there is default.
What is the language in the petition that you all are disagreeing about, whether it is relevant to negligence or precludes negligence? What exactly was the language? Did you admit the act, or did you say they intended the act, or intended the harm, or intended to deprive her of use, or what did you say was intended?
Well, we're dealing with inartful pleadings here, and of course at the trial stage, at the claimant stage, of course we denied those things, but. And later we admit that the pleadings stated that. Mm-hmm. In light of how this came about, where you have initially a petition saying there's an intentional tort, and another petition amending, you figure the two amendments are changing something, that they're not going to repeat actions for conversion, even though they use the wrong words. And using the word negligence, and using words that they were in this title loan business, and that they intended to take possession of these cars.
But they nowhere allege what act they did negligently. Wouldn't that a requirement?
They did not. They did not do that, and the pleading was deficient. Now, under our rules of pleading, liberal amendments are granted, and it could have happened in this case. Any time up to the time of submitting to a jury, for example, and the insured would have been flying solo without the benefit of his insurer providing the defense. That is where the breach of the duty locks in. Now, I would admit that we can't just say, oh, you're going to amend at any time, and so there's always a duty. But under the particular facts of this case, where there was initial attempt at an intentional tort in the pleading, and then they I guess, pleading in the alternative or trying to, said, well, it could have been a negligent act. It put the insurer on notice to make a further inquiry to ascertain facts that would pertain to the case.
Well, what amendment could have been made that would have given rise to a cause of action distinguishable from conversion?
If they had amended to state that there was negligence in ascertaining whether or not the security was perfected or whether they had the wrong title number. Mm-hmm.
But the trial court was never presented with any pleading that said that, though, right?
It was not.
So how could we convict the trial court of error having not ever been presented with a pleading that would potentially bring the coverage issue in?
I don't propose to convict the trial court of error on the pleadings. I'm only dealing with the obligation of the insured to go beyond the pleadings and ascertain facts that would relate to whether or not there is a duty to defend. I admit that those initial pleadings were deficient, and the Court of Appeals ultimately found so on the negligent count.
And what is our law on that? What kind of duty arises in the insurer? What triggers a duty to make further inquiry?
I think it would go on a case-by-case basis, but I think one thing that helps is to look at the motivation.
Are there cases that say that there's a lower trigger for a duty of inquiry than there is for adequate pleading?
Yes, the Prairie Framing case so states.
Okay.
And actually repeats it to make the point clear. There's a lot in that case, but they repeated that particular point. So I think the law is fairly certain on that.
Well, back to my question. So now they've amended it, said that you negligently assessed what your right to repossess, which led to what? How does the rest of that count go?
Well, it goes to, of course, the taking of the property,
right?
And here,
which you had no right to take.
Well, and that would be a fact issue.
Well, but I mean, that has to be alleged.
Yes.
If you have a right to take it, it doesn't matter how careless you were in taking it, right?
Agreed.
And once you've taken it, it's conversion.
If you have no right to possess it, and that's the issue here, that was never reached, that the insurer should have made the inquiry to.
Are you saying if you have a right to possess it, you can still be liable because you were negligent in the way you went about exercising your lawful right?
No, I'm not saying that. There is also a fact difference here between the allegation of whether there was a right to possess it or not, which is ultimately has never been decided.
No amended count raising negligence can ever succeed unless it ends up with you taking the property without a legal right to do so.
That's correct.
And that's conversion.
Again, I would say that it becomes, I would say this though, Judge, if we view it that way, if we make that cold, hard rule on repossession of cases, we are in effect excluding any possibility of insurance coverage for negligence for lenders in repossession.
Well, maybe you just have to buy special insurance that covers payday lenders, these kind of, and if it's not offered, then that's a risk of doing your kind of business. But they make a point that you paid only $250 for I'm not sure what period of time, that you were not buying insurance that would be that comprehensive or cover those kind of damages.
The problem with that is that even if you did not have an intentional act exclusion in the policy, the public policy of the state is that you shall not be indemnified or insured for intentional acts. And conversion, by the very nature of it, or repossession is an intentional act. So you have to look at the process involved. Were they negligent in making that assessment? I want to point out that
You're saying you don't, the tort you're suing over is not the conversion, but the earlier wrongful decision to take
yes,
the property?
Yes, precisely.
But your act of repossessing was clearly intentional, true?
Yes.
And so this kind of policy and the definition of occurrence, I think, was designed more for accidents, right?
Yes.
All right, so how do you see coverage when that was more for a negligence that takes place when an accident occurs as opposed to your intentional act of conversion?
I would submit that with their, as this court has said in the Sherry case, that accident can involve a process. I accidentally misread the perfection documents. I accidentally did something that led to my decision to repossess. So that is where the accident or negligence comes in.
But isn't the problem that in many situations that might fit, but under the law, once you wrongfully take the item, it is considered an intentional tort, and it is conversion, which is an intentional tort. So you say to look at the particular facts, but don't these particular facts count against you? Because as Judge Wilson's question said, this is not simply a wrong left turn or some other kind of negligent situation. It's something that, by law, is an intentional tort if you take it.
I think it depends on the motivation. Again, going back to the...
But conversion doesn't depend on the motivation, does it?
That's no, my,
that's
admittedly
the point.
It does.
Often it does. Normal in other situations it does, but is this somewhat unique because it doesn't?
It is unique in that.
That was your analogy, though. We're talking about the wrong left turn. When you make the wrong left turn, unless you crash into someone else, there's no action. But once you hit the other car or hit someone, then there's damages that are an action. You don't have an action when you commit the negligence. The action occurs when you actually hit someone else and cause damages.
I think the focus
and so
here,
in this case, you'd argue that there was negligence in assuming you had the right to possession. And that negligence would get you to that point. Now, whether it gets you around the conversion and intentional torts is another question.
Except that if you don't have, if it never results in harm, negligence is inactionable. So until you could be negligent all you want in your office reading the file, but until you go and take the car, there's no harm. And once you take the car, it's conversion, it seems.
I would simply say that that looking to the motivation is important in determining that. I understand the unique nature of the conversion action. But
what was the motivation? Looking at the motivation, then what was the motivation in taking the car?
Exercising one's legal right as they perceived it to obtain security over when there has been a default, which incidentally may be another area where there was negligence if they wrongfully determined whether they were in default or not. I would like to make one comparison to other intentional torts, if I may, and that involves the tort of trespass, which again is an intentional tort. Numerous jurisdictions have held that when there is a motivation not to do a wrongful act, but just a motivation to, for example, tree cut, and they made a mistake in finding the boundary. Five or six jurisdictions have held, and I can give citations later if the court would like, have found that there was a duty to defend, even though there was an intent to go cut someone else's trees or to do work on other people's lands.
Is there any further questions? Thank you, counsel. Your time has expired.
Mm-hmm.
Would you please submit those cases then to the court and to opposing counsel?
I will.
All right, thank you.
Very quickly. Franklin Quickcash didn't buy litigation insurance for $125 for $2 million in coverage. It's not litigation insurance. The test that this court has articulated over and over again as to the duty to defend, although it's broad, if the underlying action does not seek damages that are potentially covered by the policy, there is no duty to defend. And as some of the panel members have pointed out, at the end of the day, it was conversion. You took the car. The damages awarded for that taking of the car would be the value of the car. Or they required to give the car back. One of those two things. It makes no sense to say that Continental Western would be required to pay for the car. They get to keep the car, but we have to pay for the car? That makes no sense. That's a windfall to them.
Is there some kind of litigation insurance? Is there
Not that I am aware of. Okay. There certainly is specialized errors and omissions coverage for lender liability. There's lender liability policies that you can purchase. I can tell you they're very expensive because, and this court has recognized this over and over again, this is a business risk. There are certain things that we all do in our lives that we know the decisions that we make are part of the business that we practice. Now, they have an option. We talked about it briefly before. They have an option before they go and engage in self-help to get court determination. They chose not to do that, and I understand why, because it's expensive to go to court. But they assume the risk then that they didn't go, you know, they didn't dot the I's, they didn't cross the T's, they didn't get somebody to say, yep, you've got a good security interest here, go get the car, or make her bring it to you. They didn't do that. They engaged in self-help. They undertook that risk. They do not get to transfer that risk, that business risk, to Continental Western, because at the end of the day, there's no way, there's no construct that you can come up with that would say damage is awarded against them in that underlying action would be covered by our policy. They're not covered by our policy because they don't represent property damage. And well, she wanted the car, not for loss of use of the car. She wanted the car. It was clearly expected or intended. The loss of use of the property was clearly expected or intended. And the loss of use happened when it was in the insured's care, custody, and control. This policy was designed to make sure that it did provide coverage only for fortuitous events, true accidents, and not the intentional exercise of a business decision. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. The matter will be taken under advisement.